Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the show. Today is Friday, October 9th, and just a reminder that Friday is a favorite day here on the show. Right, Jen?
Yep.
You love Fridays, too. And there's no reason not to love Friday, I think.
Why do you love Friday?
I love Friday because I don't have much to do, and I'm getting ready for the weekend. So knowing you don't have to do something the following day is pretty liberating for me.
Great.
Okay. So there we go. going to be another scorcher. It was very hot yesterday.
Yes.
And we're not over the heat just yet.
When are we supposed to be over it?
I don't know, Jen. I'm not sure what the forecast is.
Hmm.
But I hope it gets a little cooler next week. I think it's going to be this hot for a few good days.
It's been hot for a while now.
Yeah, it has. We had a couple of days break, but it's back on, so there you go.
Yeah, today and tomorrow are supposed to be 100.
Oh, nice. Very cool.
Next weekend's going to get cooler into the high 80s.
Okay. I'll believe it when I see it.
Also, I mean, to say that the high 80s is cooler,
right,
you know, is still pretty crazy because that's like summer weather.
That's quite a statement, right. And so much for winter here in October. We'll be waiting for it. So, Jen, you did your show on Wednesday.
Yeah.
How did it go for you?
Went really well, we thought. I mean, it felt really good, and we got some good feedback.
Yeah. I would say the show was great. You know, I listened. Usually I don't have time to listen to shows, but I listened live, and I was very impressed. You know, you guys are good. You're naturals.
Thanks.
You know. And so you guys had fun.
We did.
Right?
A lot of fun.
You had the guests on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Molly and Joe, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they talked about the
Soulmate Experience.
Soulmate Experience. I always get confused because we had a show, Soulmate Medium Experience. Yeah. So what'd you guys talk to them about, like, how to find a soulmate? Or
yeah, and how to know someone's a soulmate and how to know when someone isn't a soulmate. And, you know, I think that's a term that people throw around very loosely, or like it's like an ideal situation where someone's your soulmate. And then there's always the conversation, like, do you believe in soulmates? Is there only one soulmate? What if you found him and you sent him away?
Right.
Then what? Are you destined to be alone forever? Or like, I think it's just something we've all been mystified by for so long, especially as like girls.
Yeah.
You know, you dream of finding your Prince Charming and you can call him your soulmate, whatever. But Lauren and I are very, like, interested in that subject. So
yeah.
It was great to talk to them about it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think that that soulmates can sometimes be someone you may not necessarily get along with, you know, but they help you with your lesson in this life. At least that's spiritually what I think. So it's not always going to be somebody that everything is sweet and good with them, but your soulmate should be somebody to help you with your journey. So I think sometimes they would you'd have someone who might challenge you in that, you know.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, I mean, in spirituality, if you believe that we choose our parents in order for us to learn our lesson and stuff. So, you know, some people maybe choose terrible parents that are going to be terrible parents to help them through their journey. You know, if they don't go through, you know, I mean, obviously we all get screwed up by our parents, you know. So,
yeah.
You know, so then the rest of life is overcoming that, I think, you know. We're going to talk to that more about that with our guest who's going to come on in a few minutes. Very interesting. She's written a book, at least one or two, I think. And so we're going to talk to her about that. And we'll actually be talking about things like this, about going through challenges in life and overcoming adversity and so forth. So that should be an interesting show.
Yes, I'm fascinated by that. And we've talked about why people, like some people do and some people don't overcome things.
Right.
So yeah. I think it'll be interesting to have some facts behind that.
Yeah, that's true. So what kind of future guests are you going to have? Are you going to have any... you should try and get some people that are involved with the apps and stuff, you know, all those...
obviously.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll reach out.
Go ahead. You've reached out to them? Good.
Yeah, so we have a lineup through the end of October. I mean, the end of November.
Wow.
We have a music video director next week. After that, we've got a dating expert. We've got matchmakers. We've got actors and, you know, actresses. Wow. We've got just a bunch of different people.
Sounds promising. If you guys want personality-based radio, there you go.
And you're going to learn a few things or two and probably laugh. So.
Yeah, and that's Wednesdays at noon right here on Channel 1, so you guys can catch that. It's complicated as a show.
Yeah.
Did you guys do a Two Drunk Girls episode?
Yes.
This week, and what was it about?
It was about birthday texting, about birthday. How when you like have an ex, like sometimes they text you on your birthday, and like we gave rules. So like if you're an ex that like ended badly, you're not supposed to text, or if you do, it needs to be short and sweet. Don't get crazy with it.
Yeah.
And don't air all of like the things you ever wanted to say to the person on that day. Save it for another day. Like it's any other day in the like 364 other days, you can say whatever you want to say. Don't save it for the birthday.
Yeah.
Huh? Unless you're just an awful person, which in that case, really watch the video.
Yeah.
That we put
now,
out.
Is it appropriate to send a text when you're an ex at all?
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
If you stayed friends or something.
Yeah. I mean, if you ended on good terms and like, you know, you're both decent people, then yes. And if you cared about each other, sure.
Yeah.
But if you ended on bad terms and recently or at all just ended on bad terms, just try harder. Don't be an asshole on somebody's birthday. That's what we have to say.
Okay, well, we learned a lesson today, folks. There you go. You know, texting is it's a delicate thing, you know. I mean, the thing is that some people prefer texting, and sometimes I realize I go through like really long text and I'm going, this is not what texting is for, you know.
Right.
You got to have conversations.
Yeah.
So, but it's so convenient. It's tempting, you know, cuz you don't want to sit there and have the whole conversation in one time.
No.
Right.
And I like that just because I'm doing a million things.
Yeah, so you can be doing things, you know. You start the conversation, you're home. You finish the conversation, you're at a restaurant or shopping or whatever,
right.
You know.
When I get to it, basically. Yeah. On my time. But I do prefer to, like, end things with people over text and just because I can hide behind the text and don't have to deal. And it's, like, it's very limited to, like, awkward silences. Like, it gets those away.
Right. Unless it's someone you know for a while, right? I mean, or would you still end it?
No, if you're in, like, a long relationship with somebody, I think you need to do it in person.
Right.
But... like with somebody you're just starting to see, I feel like text is just so much easier.
Yeah. Get them out of your face. Oh, wow. A couple of things here. Just this thing. I mean, you know how there's controversy with people that are killing wildlife and things like this. And I'm seeing a headline of a Texas girl who's 10 years old and she killed an 800-pound gator with a crossbow. So sounds like a nice story, but why kill an animal, you know?
Why is it a nice story?
Because, because she's young and she was able to, you know... Yeah, you know what? It's not a nice story. You're right. So why is this even here? They're showing her posing with a dead animal.
Right. What does the article say?
She went hunting with her father.
That's the whole article?
So it's not like a bravery or anything, you know? At first I thought it's a nice article because maybe they were attacked or something. But that's not the case.
So the article is about the fact she hunted, but what's the angle?
That she's 10 years old and the gator is 800 pounds and she killed it with a crossbow.
So are they saying she's strong or are they saying that why is a 10-year-old killing
anyone? They're not saying she's strong or anything. They're just saying that this is the fact. There's no article, just a little video.
Oh.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously I felt that it's a headline worth mentioning, but you're right. It's not. I mean, the thing is that it really bothered me to see her with this dead animal, you know. I don't understand hunting at all. I don't get it.
I don't either.
It's a sport, you know. I don't know why it's even allowed when so many species are disappearing.
I agree with that. I also don't understand fishing when people catch things and let them go.
Yeah.
What's the point at all?
Yeah, I know. But don't they keep them alive, though? Yeah, they keep them alive, but
still, what's
them.
The point?
Yeah, just like for sport or something.
Right, you know? I don't really get that.
Yeah, I know. All right, well, I'm getting this buzzing thing.
I am too.
It's really irritating, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the headphones. I'm sure the listeners don't hear it, but we are. And it's the box. It's always the box. All right. I mean, can we continue talking like this? It's really bothering me. It was better before, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me see. I'm just trying to move some wires here. Okay, that's a little, yeah, it changes, right? Okay, well, we're going to have to deal with that, folks. All right, so we're going to bring in our guest right now, and we have Michaela Haas in the studio. Welcome to the show, Michaela.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. Sorry to welcome you with bad headphones, but, you know, we'll try and
power through it.
Yeah.
Well, as you know, my book is called Bouncing Forward, Transforming Bad Breaks into Breakthroughs. So we'll just use that and breakthrough, right?
Okay. Yeah, that's true. Do talk into the mic when you do, okay? You can still look at me. I know I'm worth looking at, but talking
so
to the
handsome.
Mic.
I can't take my eyes off.
Thank you. Wow. What a compliment. You see, my day is done. So welcome to the show, Michaela. You wrote a book, but you're much more than your book, obviously. So tell us a little bit about what it is that you do.
So I'm a reporter. I'm originally from Europe, but I live in LA now. I'm also a coach. I have a coaching company. I teach mindfulness and meditation. I've been a practicing Buddhist for over 20 years, and that has a lot to do with the book I wrote, because so often as a reporter, you know, you meet people who've been through dramatic experiences, right?
Right.
And I've noticed over the years how different people deal with hard experiences, with tough crisis. So this question has fascinated me for many, many years. Why do some people come out of traumas or setbacks stronger and wiser and more compassionate? Wow. And why do others fall apart? And what makes the difference? And can we learn to prepare ourselves for trauma? Because 90% of us will go through one or more traumas in a lifetime. So what can we do to fortify ourselves for that? And what can we do to heal?
So you're saying that many people are going to go through trauma
in their
life.
When I say trauma, though, I mean any kind of event that pulls the rug out from under you. So I'm not just talking about the big capital T traumas like the war in Iraq or being diagnosed with terminal cancer, but also the everyday traumas, you know, being hit by a car, being diagnosed with a non-life-threatening illness, going through a divorce, losing your job, all these things that leave us baffled, and sometimes we think we have nowhere to go.
Yeah. Wow. Did you have a question? I'm sorry.
I was going to ask what exactly is a trauma, but you answered it.
Well, trauma literally means wound, actually. It's like a wound. We're hurt. We're hurting. And so, you know, the psychiatric manual defines trauma as when something life-threatening happens. Mm. But I think so often it's something not life-threatening that just pulls the rug out from under us.
Mm.
And so I use the term trauma and crisis and setback almost as synonyms.
Yeah. But obviously it has to be a big deal. It's not the small things that are irritant to us.
Your world,
so you're saying it's life-threatening.
Yeah. It's not life-threatening.
Oh, not
That's
always.
How the psychiatric manual defines it. But in the science of post-traumatic growth, we define it a little bit differently.
Mm.
We define it as something that your world comes crashing down.
Right.
You
And that's different for everybody.
And that's different for everybody. For some people, a divorce is a relief. For others, it's traumatic.
Yeah.
For some, going into combat in Iraq is the most meaningful mission of their life, and for others it's a traumatic experience. So trauma lies in the eye of the beholder. It's according to the one who experiences it, and nobody else can judge another's pain.
Yeah, that's true. And sometimes people like compare pain, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a fair thing to say, because You don't really know what somebody else's pain is like.
You never know. Like Viktor Frankl, the Auschwitz survivor, he says pain.
Man's Search for Meaning.
Man's Search for Meaning, yeah. Right. Very famous book, sold millions of copies.
Yes.
And he said, he compared pain to gas. And he said, like, when you have, it doesn't matter how big the hollow space is, when you put gas in, it fills the whole room. And it's the same with pain. It doesn't really matter how someone else judges it, as how big it is or how insignificant it is. It matters how much it hurts us, how painful it is for the person who experiences it.
Right.
Right?
And that's a conclusion, I think, that he had in the book. At least that's what I came away with it, is that he was a psychiatrist and he was in the death camps.
Right.
And for those who don't know, Viktor Frankl, he wrote the book Man's Search for Meaning and other books as well, too. So he was a psychiatrist. He went through the Holocaust, and he wondered why some people threw themselves at the electric fences and killed themselves, and why some people continued to move, to stay on and, mm-hmm. and go on mm-hmm. and survived. Mm-hmm. And he concluded that it has to do with not what happens to you, but how you view what is happening to you, what meaning you put to it, right?
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
And in my book, I have a chapter about an old friend of mine, Coco Schumann, who survived Auschwitz, and whose story is in some ways very similar to Viktor Frankl's, because he too, he experienced exactly that. Some people gave up. And
right.
then they would...
Yeah, I probably would have. Well, I don't know. I don't know. It's hard to know, you know. But in situation, they were like in hell. That was living hell.
It's absolutely hell.
Yeah, it's hard to judge anybody, I think, at that point, you know.
Oh, yeah,
for their
of course.
Actions. Yeah.
No, but to say not to give up, even in a situation like this, where everything is taken away from you, every kind of freedom.
Right. And dignity and...
We're just surrounded by brutality of the worst and craziest order. So Coco Schumann came out of that, and he says, well, I could have spent the rest of my life being devastated that I was in Auschwitz, or I could spend the rest of my life being happy that I got out of it.
Right. Wow.
So how are some people different than others? And can you spot that in somebody, like... You know, I mean, just by looking at me, like, would you be able to say, like, okay, you look like somebody that can do that or somebody that is going to be crushed?
Well, about a third of us are naturally resilient. So it has to do with our genetic makeup, with how we've been brought up, if we've had parents who instilled in us a kind of you can do anything attitude. So that has something to do with it. But that's not the whole story. There are so many factors. And the interesting thing with the science of post-traumatic growth is that sometimes it's the least resilient people who have the most room to grow.
Really? Wow. So, very interesting.
So it's not exactly the same as resilience.
Right.
And I think it's like... You know, some people are born with a certain health or a higher risk for a heart attack. So I think especially when we're not the most resilient, we have all the more responsibility to train to become more resilient. Just as when you have maybe a heart condition, you need to live an especially healthy lifestyle, right? So resilience is like a muscle that you can train. So everybody can learn it, absolutely everybody.
Wow. What are some of the things people can do to become more resilient?
So the most important thing to do is to have friends and to have a support system, because nobody can do it alone. Maya Angelou says that in the book as well, in Bouncing Forward. Because sometimes people think resilience means that you can do it by yourself and nothing will sway you and you're strong. But there is absolutely nobody who can go through a severe crisis all by themselves. And so we need at least one good friend who we can call at 3 in the morning and who will be there for us. And that's especially true for children, actually. So because as children, we're the most vulnerable, right? So even if children have a very violent or abusive childhood, if they have one person who stands by them no matter what, they have a very, very big chance to come out of that and find healing and go on to live a happy, fulfilled life.
Very interesting. We're talking to Michaela Haas. For those of you wanting to follow, the website is michaelahaas.com. The last name is H-A-A-S. And so you came out with the book Bouncing Forward, Transforming Bad Breaks into Breakthroughs. Was the book published yet? I mean, we have the physical book here.
It just came out this week, October 6th, so it's hot off the press.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
How does it feel? Like a new baby, right?
It's absolutely like a baby. And it's, you know, you put it out to the world and people are starting to respond and posting reviews. And I'm getting letters from people who've been through some crisis and who are telling me this helps me in the book. It's great to find what other people have gone through and what has helped them. So it's wonderful to have this kind of conversation with the readers.
Yeah. So now, how did you get into this? I mean, did you go through traumas yourself? I mean, did you feel that you went through something that you had to share with other people? Or was it more like a scholarly thing where you studied it in school and you wanted to help people that way?
Unfortunately, we don't study resilience in school. But the personal impetus for me was I got quite ill in my 20s. And I had thought I was resilient beforehand. I was traveling the world by myself. I was studying in India and Nepal. I had been doing life talk shows. So I was enjoying the adrenaline and the stress and the adventure. And then in Nepal, I got quite ill, and I ended up being bedridden for 8 months.
Wow.
So I don't want that to sound like, I know other people have gone through much worse. Like we were just talking about Coco Schumann being in Auschwitz, and there are people in my book who've lost a child. So I'm not comparing, you know, my story to them. But for me, it was devastating because when you're in your 20s, you're supposed to be strong and energetic and go out there and work on your career. And here I was, and I couldn't do anything. My body was just not obeying.
Yeah. And what kind of sickness did you have?
Well, at first they couldn't figure it out. So then they figured out that it was some kind of virus that had attacked my immune system. And so my immune system was just overwhelmed and just gave up, essentially. So I couldn't keep any food down. I got very, very skinny. And it took about 2 years, really, to slowly become better and being able to go back to work. So in this time, I asked, well, why do other people who've been through worse than I have, how do they deal with it? You know, what methods have they found that have helped them? And can I learn to become more resilient? So this was really the beginning of the journey.
So it was a self-help thing, but then you... Thankfully,
I call it science help, because then I also brought in, you know, the science of post-traumatic growth, and I talk with trauma experts, and I've read hundreds of studies about trauma and about post-traumatic growth. So I like the term science help because it's not just what people think, but it's about what has proven to work.
So what does prove to work?
You got to read the book.
Well, so we can give the people, you know,
course,
a little
I'm
taste
kidding.
Of what is in the book.
I'm kidding.
So there are more than 60 methods in the book. So one of the most important things, I think, when people hear post-traumatic growth, they often think that it's kind of like positive thinking. And the first step is actually to make friends with yourself and to be honest with yourself and to admit the pain and to acknowledge the pain. Because I said earlier, trauma means wound. So when we have a wound, we need to take care of it so that it can heal, because otherwise it will fester. So this attitude that we sometimes have of like, oh, you know, it's not that bad, and just grin and bear, that's...
Or denial.
Denial is the least helpful. That's the most unhelpful thing we can do with trauma. So the first step is really to acknowledge it.
Acknowledge it and actually understand you have to deal with it. It's not going to go away.
Yes.
It leaves a scar.
Absolutely.
And obviously, like you said, people experience a lot of harder things and worse things, like at war and abuse and things like that, that stays with you.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, death in the family, things like that, that would all cause trauma.
Yes.
What about trauma hypochondriacs, like people that always think that the world is ending and like that they're like, it's raining, it's the worst, you know? And
I haven't met that many of them, and I think
that's good.
For you.
That's good.
No, I think that's such a delicate topic, because for a long time, people who've actually gone through traumas, you know, they were shamed as being hysterics. Like Sigmund Freud said that about the survivors of sexual abuse. He called them hysterical because he couldn't believe that what they told him had happened to them had actually happened. So we have a long history of denying trauma.
I mean, tonight, even just speaking of that, the Cosby trial is happening, and all the women are speaking tonight on ABC.
The trial?
On the NBC, sorry.
Well, see, that's really an example of a trauma that has not been dealt with, because for so long these women did not dare to come out and speak up against this very powerful entertainment figure. So a trauma can only really begin to heal when we express it and when we acknowledge it, not only to ourselves, but to at least one other person.
Right. What did you say? It's going to be a trial?
I don't know.
Like a mock trial, maybe.
It's not a trial.
Going to trial.
No,
right?
It's something they're all just speaking out on.
Yeah, they're
all 30 of
talk
them.
About it.
Yeah.
Wow, 30 people.
Yeah.
My God. Yeah. I don't know. What's his option? I mean, at this point.
How does he bounce back from this trauma that he caused himself?
Well, first step, be honest. Fess up. That
right?
would be good, right?
Yeah. If he admitted it to even himself, he probably hasn't even admitted it to himself that he was wrong.
I wonder what he tells himself. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question.
But for those women, I would imagine different ways would apply in order to deal with their trauma and everything.
Yes. I mean, for them to come out and talk about it, that's huge.
Yeah.
And
in public, too.
In public. And I don't know how much support and help they're getting individually, but I know that some of them have never talked about this before to anybody.
Really?
You know, even to their families or their partners, or maybe they mentioned it and they weren't believed. And actually dealing with traumas like this is not just the responsibility of the individual, it's teamwork.
Really?
And it's it's the responsibility of all of us, of us as a culture, of us as colleagues, of us as friends, when someone has gone through something like that, to make the space and room to have them express their feelings and talk about it.
Yeah. So you have to have a support system.
Absolutely.
You have to be supportive. Like, the people around you have to also be supportive of
it. Yeah, it goes both ways, right?
Right. No,
you
absolutely.
You have to be a good friend also. You have to have good friends, and you have to be a good friend.
Yeah.
But actually, it was so interesting, even like when I went to the resilience boot camp of the American Army,
mm-hmm.
even there, you know, we have this image of the soldier as the strong, invincible hero. And even there, the first thing they learn there is to communicate honestly and openly, and to admit their weaknesses and fears, and to ask for help, because the Army has realized that projecting this image of the invincible soldier can be fatal.
Wow. Yeah. So a little bit about you, Michaela. You said you're originally from Europe, right?
Yes.
Where in Europe are you from?
Near Munich in Germany.
Oh, really?
Yep.
And let me just, this is making me crazy. Maybe I'll just take off the headphones, but then I can't hear what's going on.
I
get distracted
over.
Easily. So you lived all over?
Yeah, I grew up in Germany. I started working there as a reporter, and then I went to Asia, to India and Nepal to do my PhD there, or at least start my PhD there.
Really, in Nepal?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. Why did you choose to go there?
Unusual.
I was fascinated. At first, I was taking a sabbatical, and I wanted just to travel through. And then I loved it so much that I ended up staying. I ended up sending a fax to my boss at the newspaper saying, thank you very much, I'm not coming back.
Wow.
And I enrolled in a study program there and embarked on a PhD.
Wow. That takes a lot of courage to do that, though, huh?
You know, when you're young, when you're in your 20s, I think it's good to do these kind of things, to travel and see the world.
Yeah, but that was spontaneous. I mean, you were there and you decided not to go back. Wow.
I just enjoyed it. I come from a village of 250 people, so
really?
I had the strong urge, you know, to get out and see the world.
Yeah. And as far away as possible.
Not stay in this little village forever.
Wow. So what was life like in a village with only 250 people?
It's very idyllic, and everybody knows everything about you.
Right.
So in hindsight,
well, it keeps people in line, you know?
In hindsight, I think I didn't realize how good I had it, because it's a very safe environment. We were always outdoors, you know, playing outside in nature.
Yeah.
But when you're a teenager, all you want is to move to the big city where the interesting people are.
Exactly.
And
where all the action
is happening, right?
Wow.
Yeah.
So at what age did you decide to leave home and move?
Oh, as soon as I turned 18.
Really?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Oh, wow.
And where did you go from there?
I went to Munich. I studied there. I started working as a reporter for newspaper and for TV. And I was living my dream.
Wow. Very cool. So So then you finished high school at 18. You decided to move. And so you decided to actually go to college. I mean, that's pretty cool. I mean, being from a small place and having those ambitions.
Well, I started studying journalism, but I also was working as a journalist. I actually started working as a journalist when I was 16.
Oh, really?
I was very political, and I was very interested in South Africa at the time.
Wow.
And I went to an event at 16 years old about South Africa, and nobody else in this little town was interested. So there was only me and the local reporter. So we started talking because we were the only ones, and I was like, I want to become a journalist. And he's like, well, come over. And so I started, they invited me to start writing for them at age 16.
Wow,
and
very cool. Now, what interested you about South Africa? Was it apartheid or was it?
Yeah,
so it wasn't the place itself.
No, it was the injustice. I've always been somebody who gets very fired up when things are unjust.
Wow, very cool. Because did you ever go there?
I did, actually. Yeah.
Did you like it?
Later. Yeah.
It was cool, huh? I lived there for a year, but it's very dangerous there.
Yes.
Right? A lot of violence.
Depending on where you go, yeah, absolutely.
Right. And it's probably going to take a couple generations for the wounds to heal, I think.
Absolutely.
You know.
That's an example of an entire country that's traumatized, but even countries can experience post-traumatic growth.
That's
if
true,
if everybody comes together and works together towards the healing.
Yeah. So I would imagine all those from war-torn areas, like all the refugees now converging on Europe, they're all going to have to deal with traumas.
Many of them. Every fourth refugee child that comes to Europe has been diagnosed with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, which is a term I don't even use because I don't believe in stigmatizing people with that term. I say you're not necessarily disordered when somebody experiences anxiety or stress or anger in the wake of a trauma. But no, it's a huge number of people who've experienced traumas. And again, it's up to us as a society how we welcome these people and how we help them, because it's not just about a roof over the head and food, but it's about how we welcome them as human beings.
Right, and they're going to need a lot of medical help too, mental and otherwise.
Support of any kind, yes.
What exactly is post-traumatic stress, just to go back to that, because some people get it from an event and some people don't, like you said, one in four. So why would that one person have that, and how does it manifest itself?
So it depends on so many factors, right? What happens? Who is there for us? How much do we lose? And very much depends on our mindset, actually. So I don't want that to be misunderstood like it's your fault if you're traumatized. Not that at all. But how we experience something, how we respond to it, is actually more important than what happens to us. That's also something Viktor Frankl had realized.
Right, and that's what we were talking about.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's the mindset. It very much is a difference if somebody experiences a challenging situation, like in Bouncing Forward, I have this example of Army Surgeon Rhonda Cornum, who was shot down in Iraq and captured and being taken prisoner of war.
Right.
And throughout this whole ordeal, this conviction never left her. I will make it through this. They will get me out of here. She always stayed positive the whole time, despite being completely helpless because her arms were broken.
Yeah.
And then there are other people, like you mentioned before, who say, oh my God, this is terrible. I will never get out of this. And I'm helpless, and I'm so weak, and I'm so small. So Henry Ford said, if you believe you can do something or you can't, you're right.
You're right.
Right. Yeah. Oh, so I love that.
That's true. Yeah.
So a lot has to do with how strong we think we are. And that's, I think, the biggest thing I want to communicate with Bouncing Forward is we're stronger than we think.
Yeah, that's true. And we are more resilient than we think, too, you know. And that's true. And I think you can find it in many examples in life, you know, where people really go beyond what you would think a human being can do.
Absolutely. You know? We're wired for survival, and we're wired for resilience.
Right.
So a lot of people I've met, they've survived things I don't think I could survive.
Right.
But they did, and they came out of it not only surviving but thriving and learning things and finding a new meaning in life or new perspectives in life or a new appreciation for life that they didn't have before.
Yeah. And you mentioned in the book also that it's important to not treat them as victims, right? Mm-hmm. To not think that because of the trauma, they're not going to amount to anything.
Because for a long time, you know, the opinion in psychiatry was if you've experienced a certain severe trauma, like for instance the Holocaust or a very abusive, violent childhood, you will never be able to lead a happy, fulfilled life.
Right, like you're scarred for life.
You're scarred for life.
Yeah.
And now we know this is simply not true. There are things we can do to help people who have experienced this kind of violence. And even if the worst has happened, like I think Auschwitz is the worst that can happen, or losing your child is the worst that can happen, even then people find new hope and new resilience with the right support.
Yeah.
What about people that identify with their situation? Like they, that, like a Holocaust survivor, let's just say they claim to be a Holocaust survivor for the rest of their life and that's how they define themselves, how they view their identity. Mm-hmm. What do you say about that in terms of like actually moving past it, even bouncing forward?
So the people who were able to move forward and look forward, that's the key. Like I just mentioned Coco Schumann, right? He said he spent the rest of his life being happy he survived. So being stuck in the past is a very dangerous thing to do. So we need to be able to integrate it into our life narrative, you know, to say, this has happened to me, this is part of my story, and I have these scars. And post-traumatic growth doesn't mean that this has not happened or that we are not scarred or that there is no stress that we've experienced. But what it means is that to look forward and to see, well, what can I do? And one of the things that surprised me the most was that Holocaust survivors have a more positive outlook on life than their peers who had not experienced the Holocaust.
Wow.
Why
is
that?
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I think partly because they have seen the worst.
Right. So everything by comparison is just better, right?
And they appreciate what they have, I guess.
A lot of people have told me, I've survived that. Now nothing can really throw me.
Nothing will break me after this. Wow.
It kind of has, it rings to the tone of what doesn't kill me makes me stronger.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
So a lot of people have told me that, you know, because I could make it through that, now I can make it through all kinds of other challenges. Definitely. Yeah. That's certainly one aspect of discovering the strength in oneself.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. So having a good support group is one thing people can do. Yeah. What are some other things?
So one of the things I recommend is mindfulness meditation. And that's another thing that was shocking was at the Army Resilience Boot Camp, the soldiers do it every morning. They meditate. I was there with 180 sergeants in their camo fatigues, and first thing they do in the morning is they take several minutes and sit down and focus on their breathing and calm their mind, because even the Army has realized how effective this is for calming us in stressful situations and for actually healing trauma. And we know now that meditation works better for physical pain than morphine. It works better than painkillers. And it reduces pain for over 40%, even if we just meditate for a few weeks.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Without the side effects of painkillers.
How much time do you recommend meditating, then, each day?
13 minutes.
13. Everybody has a different magic number, so that's very interesting. Why 13?
So they actually found, they did a study with Marines who came back from combat, and they found that if they meditated less than 13, the effects were not as great as when they meditated more than 13 minutes. So I say start with 13 to 20 minutes. But the important thing is to do it regularly. Yeah. Like, you know, you go to the fitness studio, working out regularly is so much more effective than doing it, you know, once a month for 2 hours. And it's the same with meditation. It's a habit.
Right. And so do you provide ways how to meditate in the book as well?
Or? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I teach mindfulness meditation, so it's a very basic form of meditation anybody can do independent of religious beliefs. And also loving kindness meditation, because one of the most common feelings after trauma is guilt or shame or blaming oneself.
Right.
Oh, if only I had done something different. Why didn't I do something else? Why am I the one who survived? All these questions that are so detrimental for our health and well-being. Mm-hmm. So loving kindness meditation for ourselves and for others actually works really, really well. And just making friends with ourselves in all our weirdness and with all our pain.
So you went to school. What did you study in school?
I studied journalism and politics.
That's right. That's what you said. And so you studied politics in Nepal?
No, then I went to, I started to do a PhD in Buddhist studies. So my PhD is in Buddhist philosophy.
Wow.
In Asian studies.
That's a pretty unusual, right, topic to major in. What attracted you to it?
It was really the people I met. I didn't know anything about Buddhism when I started traveling to Asia, and especially the Tibetan refugees I met impressed me to no end.
Really?
Because they were people who had lost everything, their homeland, their families. Sometimes they had been imprisoned or even tortured, and they were among the most content and happiest and most compassionate people I'd ever met. So I wanted to know what they knew. I could not understand why these people were not more bitter or angrier. And here I was coming from, you know, having it all and being unhappy somehow, whereas these people had lost everything and they were happy. So I'm
right.
Like, I need to know what these guys know because they're onto something.
Yeah.
And that's what sparked my...
So have you integrated into your life now? I mean, do you live according to Buddhist principles?
Yeah, I've been a Buddhist for more than 20 years now.
Really?
But I'm still working on my patience.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah. Come.
At least you're working on it.
I'm working on it.
Yeah, very cool. We're talking to Michaela Haas. The book is Bouncing Forward, and you can imagine you get it everywhere. You can go to her website, Michaela Haas, HAAS.com. And I
see two A's, one S.
Two A's, one S.
And I'll also be doing a book tour starting next week.
So really?
In Santa Monica and Santa Barbara and Huntington Beach and La Jolla. Yeah, if you go on my website, I'll be probably speaking at a bookstore near you.
Yeah, very cool. So,
is this your first book?
No, it's my third, actually.
What other books did you write?
So the first book was a biography of Coco Schumann, the Auschwitz survivor, who I've known for 20 years now. He's a fabulous jazz musician who survived Auschwitz by literally playing for his life. And the second book was about the most influential female Buddhist teachers in Tibetan Buddhism. So maybe you know Pema Chodron?
Mm-mm.
When Things Fall Apart, she's a best-selling author. A lot of people find her books helpful. So her and 12 women who have brought Buddhism from Asia to the West, and who it's about their journey, but also the culture clash of, you know, two such different cultures, the Asian Buddhist culture and Western culture.
Yeah.
So Dakini Power.
Dakini Power is the name of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And did you actually interview all the women?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Just like for Bouncing Forward, it's actually about, you know, my encounters with all these fascinating people.
Very cool. So, yeah, so if you've had to deal with trauma or you know somebody who has, check out the book. It's got a lot of techniques and everything. Do you get into part of it about your life? And things like that, your background?
I speak about my life as well, and my encounters with people like Maya Angelou, who emerged from, you know, very violent and abusive childhood. Temple Grandin is in the book. I got to meet her, the autistic professor and animal behaviorist.
I just got chills. I mean, the people you spoke to are incredible. People should read this. Just to hear what these people have to say and learn some lessons from them.
Well, yeah, I really think, you know, both Maya Angelou and Temple Grandin, they're examples of people. Their life is really like a course book in post-traumatic growth. And they've overcome so much. And they almost, both of them almost didn't make it at some point. You know, there's a lot of struggle there. But to learn from them and to for them to share their insights and their wisdom was extremely rewarding.
Yeah, very cool. What does so it's Dakini Power, not Bikini Power, folks. It's Dakini Power. What does Dakini mean?
Dakini is a Sanskrit word for feminine wisdom, the embodiment of wisdom in a female form. So it means many things. It's a title of honor for a female Buddhist teacher. It's also an ancient figure in Tibetan Buddhism, especially.
Right.
I'd love to read that as well.
Yeah.
And thank you.
So, about the Eastern religions, how would you characterize them compared to Christianity or Judaism? I mean, are they? What are some of the main things about them? You know, I mean, what drew you to it?
It was really the people I met who are practicing Buddhists. And I think the essence of Buddhism is wisdom and compassion. And to bring compassion to every situation, like the Dalai Lama says, your enemy is your best teacher. That's also something I'm still working on.
Yeah.
But at least to have that attitude and to take everything we encounter in life as a learning process and to try to meet it with loving kindness and compassion. I think that's a great goal.
Yeah, rather than go through all those rituals that we have in Judaism and Christianity and everything, you focus more on harmony and...
Well, there are rituals, too, and temples, but for me it's more about the lived experience of Buddhism, you know, how you apply it in everyday life, how present you are, how mindful you are, how loving you are, how kind you are. The Dalai Lama says kindness is my religion, and I think that's
a good one
we can all subscribe to. Right?
It would be great if everyone just did.
Yeah.
Yeah, without the dogma of Western religions and so forth.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
Exactly.
Very cool. So from Nepal, where did you go then? Did you go back to Germany?
I went back to Europe. I actually was married in France at the time. And so I went back to France thinking that the Western doctors would build me back up and my friends and family would build me back up. But lo and behold, just when I was down and out, I found out my husband was cheating on me, and not just once, but like a lot. So that didn't work out well. So
how long were you married?
We were together for 5 years.
5 years.
And so as soon as I had enough strength, I left and moved back to Germany.
That's pretty traumatic too, right? To be cheated on, wouldn't you say?
It shocked me because he was such a good liar. I had not seen that coming.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow.
But here you are today. You got through it.
Yeah. I mean, I think especially because I was physically so weak, you know, you think, well, here's the person I feel closest to. They're going to be there and support me in this dark time.
They betray you.
Right? And then you find out, oh, no, they're not there for me at all. So that was very unfortunate.
I feel like that's when people usually say when it rains, it pours. Like, what is that? Is that a real thing or is that just people manifesting the pouring?
No, I do think that happens sometimes. You know, one thing goes wrong, and then it's like a domino, and one stone after the other tumbles. But also, you find out who your true friends are, right? And sometimes the people you think are your closest and will be there for you are not. And on the other hand, some people pop up of nowhere, and they're there for you, and you can rely on them. And
that's a great thing.
Yes.
To see that.
Yeah.
I actually like to, when somebody says, like, oh, it's like when it's raining, it's pouring or whatever, all this stuff is happening to me. I'm like, no, you don't understand. It's so you get it over with at one time. You only have like bad stuff at one point, and then you're free and clear, and then it's sunny again. So you get it over with.
That's true. That makes sense.
By design.
Yeah. That's a fresh way to look at it.
Thanks,
Adrian. Michaela Haas, the book is Bouncing Forward. You guys can get it anywhere. Go to her website as well. And Michaela, any other things you wanted to cover that we forgot to talk about or we didn't touch on that is important for us to know?
Well, I really want to say that post-traumatic growth is much more common than PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And most people have heard of PTSD, but there are so few people who've heard of post-traumatic growth. So that's really why I wrote the book, to, you know, get the science out there together with these stories to give people hope, and not just hope, but also the methods and the strategies how to grow out of a tough situation.
Yeah. Wow. And so how long did it take you to write the book?
I think I started asking myself that question, why do some people thrive, you know, decades ago. But it really took about 3 years to travel and meet all these people and do the research.
Do the research. You had to do a lot of research, obviously, and so forth.
Well, I enjoy doing that. I enjoy...
As a journalist, yes.
Yeah, as a journalist and really finding out what works, because in trauma... psychology, we're still learning every week practically. There's a new study coming out. We're still learning so much about what helps people and how can people heal. It's a fascinating field.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing. Well, Michaela, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having
me. You're definitely a wealth of information, a lot of encouraging stuff there to think about. You know, go out, get the book, Bouncing Forward. And I guess on your website, they can find out where and when you do your book signings, right?
Absolutely. Under news and events, there are all the dates are listed. I'll be doing, as I said, I'll be speaking in Santa Monica at Diesel Bookstore next week, and Santa Barbara, La Jolla, Huntington Beach, Pasadena.
So. Cool. Well, there's a reason to be in Southern California this week, right? There you go. And, yeah, I mean, there's still so much to talk about, you know, but we're totally out of time. So thank you again for joining us.
Thanks for
all the best with the book. Come back to let us know how it all went, and maybe there'll be a new one.
Thank you.
You know. All right, everybody. Thank you all for joining us. Jen, thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll see you on Monday.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.